we continue 9 lines up from the bottom on Lamed Zayin Omid Beis Vahashlakos. We finally get to discuss the prohibition of Bishul Akum. Shlakos, we said, was an Isser Achila. Says the Gemara, Minahani Miliu. How do we know this? What's the source for the prohibition of Bishul Akum? Amar Rav Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Kra, it's a pasuk, Ochal Bakesef Tashbireni, Vaachalti, Umayim Bakesef Titeinli, Vishasisi. That the Jewish people said to Sichon Melech Amori when they wanted to pass through their land, you will give us money, you will give us food, and we'll pay you for it, and then we'll eat it. And you'll give us water for pay as well, and we will drink it. And therefore, Kamayim. Ma mayim shelo nishtanu, af ochel shelo nishtanu. So clearly here, the Yisraelim equated water with food, just like when they asked for water from the non-Jewish Amorites. It was raw, it was lonishtana, it didn't change its form. So too, the food that they bought, it couldn't have changed its form, it had to be raw. Why did it have to be raw? Because if it would have been cooked, it would have been prohibited by Bishul Akum. So here at this point, the understanding, the Havamina, is that Bishul Akum is an Isser De'oraisa. Obviously, we're going to see in a little bit that Bishul Akum is not an Isser De'oraisa, it's actually only an Asmachta, but Tosfos points out over here on Vehashlakos, Rabbi Natan points out actually more specifically, that the fact that the rabbis entertain the idea that Shlakos, that Bishul Akum is Deoraisa, tells us that Bishul Akum is on a different level than Pas Akum. In fact, he says that Bishul Akum was an earlier enactment than Pas Akum. That is why by Pas Akum we have a leniency of Pas Palter. You can have bread that is cooked by a non-Jewish baker, and you can eat it. There's no prohibition of pas palter, only pas akum by an individual. But there isn't a similar or a parallel leniency by bishul palter. That's because bishul akum was an earlier enactment, and were more machmir. And that's evidenced here by the fact that they was entertained as a possible Isser De'oraisa. Anyhow, the Gemara continues and says as follows. Well, right now we've discussed that the item has to be in its raw state, because once it's cooked, it would be a problem of Bishul Akum. So the Gemara says, El me'ata chitin fa'asan klayos hachanem da'asurin. So are you telling me then if a person has wheat and they roasted it, they parched, made it parched, so then it would be asur? Because it's no longer raw. The chitim hachanami, if you're going to say yes, that's correct. Fatanya, we have a brisa which specifically states otherwise. Chitin vasan klayos mutarim. If you make chitin into klayos, if it's done by a non-Jew, it's permitted. Well, then how do you make this parallel with mayim and ochel with regards to the Amorites? So ela kamayim, rather you do it as follows. Ma mayim shlo nishtanu mibriyasan, just like water doesn't change from its appearance. Af ochel shlo nishtanu mibriyaso, it doesn't change from its appearance, as long as it still looks the same, that's fine. But once you cook it, it no longer looks the same, and as a result, they couldn't purchase it from the Amorites. Why? Because it was bishul Akum. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, El me'ata chitin v'tachnan hachanami da'asurin. Well, if you take wheat and you grind it, it changed. So you should say it's prohibited, even if it's not necessarily through a medium of heat. V'chitim hachanami. And if you can tell me that is the case, that if you make wheat into grain, into flour, it would be asur. V'atanya chitin v'asan klayos hakamachim v'asaltos shelhen mutarim. The kamach, the flour, is mutar. So then, what's the parallel between mayim and ochel? Ela kamayim, ma mayim shelo nishtanu mibriyasan aydei ha'or, af ochel shelo nishtanu mibriyasan aydei ha'or. Just like water doesn't get changed from what it looks like through a medium of fire, it still looks like water, so to any food that's not changed through fire. That's what it is. So as long as it's done through fire and it doesn't change, then it's okay. But, and then that's why they were able to get this food from the Amorites. But if it would have changed as a result of the fire, then it would have been prohibited because of Bishalakam. The Gemara says, Midi or Ksiv. Does it say anywhere in the Pasuk that about fire? It says, we'll purchase food for you and we'll purchase water from you. It doesn't mention anything about cooking. So rather, the Gemara finally resolves the what we mentioned already originally, that no, there really is no Iser deoraisa of Bishal Akum, Ella midrabanan. Rather, the whole institution of Bishal Akum is rabbinic in nature, ukra asmachta ba'alma. The pasuk itself is just an asmachta, something to hang our hats on, but it's certainly only rabbinic in nature. So what is the source of the prohibition of Bishal Akum? Rashi over here says, Shelo yehei Yisrael ragil Etzlo, says Rashi, the reason why Bishul Akum is prohibited is because if you hang out with the idolater, then you might end up being fed something tamei. He might feed you something that's not kosher when you have such a close relationship. Maybe he'll do something wrong, and he'll feed you something incorrect. That's Rashi's sheet over here. But interestingly enough, Rashi earlier by the Mishnah said the prohibition of the source of the prohibition of the reason for the prohibition of Bishul Akum is because of chasnas, is because of socialization. So the commentaries try to understand or reconcile these two statements of Rashi. Is he arguing with himself? Is he contradicting, or is he not contradicting? Is he explaining? That's the question that the Acharonim deal with in Rashi's approach. Even Tosos points out this idea, this problem of Rashi. He points out the stira in the first Tosfos, Ella Dibur Maskil Ella. And then Tosfos also adds on one other point, which is important for us to note, is the opinion of Rabbi Avraham Breb David, that this prohibition of Bishul Akum applies where? It makes sense to say that the prohibition of Bishul Akum would apply if the idolater or the non-Jew is cooking food in their home, that you might feed you something which is tameh, or maybe chasnas. But if the non-Jew is cooking in your home, then we shouldn't be concerned about chasnas, nor should we be concerned about eating something non-kosher. It's done in a different atmosphere. Rabbeinu Tam argues with this approach of Rabbi Avraham and says, no, there's no distinction. Bishul Akum is Bishul Akum, whether it's done in a Jew's house or a non-Jew's house. But this, so Rabbeinu Avraham is the source for the leniency of having housekeepers in a home who's cooking food without any supervision. No one's turning on the pilot light, and he or she is cooking the food. It's really Bishul Akum. So you have at least Rabbi Avraham to rely on that when it's done in the home of a Jew, you have what to rely on. It's not ideal, but sometimes that's a heter that we have to rely on, although there aren't now more modern types of gadgets that can be used to circumvent the prohibition of Bishul Akum. Okay, but there are two more important points about Bishul Akum. Amar of Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav Kol Hanechal Kamo Shu Chai Ein Bo Mishem Bishul Ovdei Kochavim. That so long as the food is something which can be eaten in its raw state, it's not considered a prohibition of Bishul Akum if the non-Jew cooks it, since it can already be eaten in its raw state. Besura Masnu, that's how they tied it in Surah, but in Pumbedita Masnu, but in Pumbedita they actually tied it different, had a different teaching. Amar of Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav Kol She'enu Nechal Al Shulchan Malacham Lelapes Bo Zapas Ein Bo Mishem Bishul Ovdei Kochavim, that anything which was not fit for a royal table would not fall under the prohibition of Bishul Akum. So any food which is not fancy, then if a non-Jew cooks it for you, it won't fall under the category of Bishul Akum. My Benayah, what's the difference between these two opinions of Kamoshu Nachal Chai and Olo Shulchan Malachim? Ike Benayah Dagim Ketanim, small fish, V'ardi, mushrooms, V'daisa, and some types of porridge. Sometimes these items might be Nechal Chai, or Einor Nechal, they might be Einor Nechal Chai, they might not be beaten raw, but they're Olo Shulchan Malachim, or vice versa. And then as a result, according to one, it would be prohibited, and one, it would be lenient. Practically speaking, we take the kulas of both. In other words, in order to be prohibited under the Bishalakam, it has to be both olah al shulchan malachim and something which is not usually eaten raw. If you have both the chumrah, then we're machmir on bishalakam again because it's only midrabanan. So we'll take the chumras of both or the kulas of both. We'll be a little more lenient. So, just to recap our discussion of bishalakam, which we'll have to continue a little bit more next time, but the prohibition of bishalakam originally was thought to be a din d'oraisa. It's really only a din d'rabanan. Is it the prohibition seems to be because of chasnus, but Rashi does add on this idea of that bishalakam might lead to a non-Jew feeding you non-kosher food. But nevertheless, bishalakam only applies when, number one, the item is not eaten in its raw state, and number two, it is also fit for a king.